The blessings of COVID. That's what I talked to Dr. John Kleinig about. It's a funny, it seems like a funny topic, right? How could COVID be understood as a blessing? But if we look at things through the eyes of Jesus, then we receive everything as a blessing from Him, at least as a gift. And Dr. Kleinig talks about the seven different kinds of blessings that we have in COVID. I hope you'll enjoy this extended conversation.
Computer. Dr. Kleinig, good morning for you. And welcome to everyone watching. Pastor Wolfmuller here with Dr. Klein. I've lived a charmed life in a lot of ways, and I count as one of my chief blessings is being able to have spent time in conversation with Dr. Kleinig. And I come away from that conversation so blessed that I was thinking about this question. I was just meditating on the blessings of COVID. And I thought, who better to talk to about that than Dr. Kleinig? So, Dr. Kleinig, thank you for joining me. It's great to have you.
It's good to see you.
What is a good way to introduce you? You've done so much. I was talking to you about you with Dr. Giese last week, and he helps with the Concordia commentaries. And I said, who in the world could write a biblical commentary on an Old Testament book, Leviticus, and a New Testament book, Hebrews? And he's not even a professional exegetical theologian, but a practical theologian. Dr. Kleinig taught at Luther Seminary in Adelaide, Australia. Is that right?
Yes. And Australian Lutheran College, it's now called.
And most famously, Grace Upon Grace is one of the top, I bet you that's one of the top five books that I've given away on Lutheran spirituality. So, Dr. Kleinig, how are things in Australia?
They're looking fine at the moment. We've had a very mild summer. Because of the weather patterns, we shifted from drought mode to rain mode, etc. And we're moving from summer to autumn, and the weather's lovely. And the country's opening up very quickly now after the shutdown of the last 9 months. There's a sense of optimism around the place. So last night we went to a wonderful concert. Tellingly, they were all local artists. Usually you have overseas artists, but local artists, and they were better than most of the overseas guys that we get. So it was exhilarating to be able to go to a concert again.
That's fantastic. Whenever I was in Australia, I was mostly way up in the north, and it was during our summer, Australian winter, the dry season. And I just remember flies being everywhere. And I've always wanted to ask you if that's the case also in Adelaide,
Yes, sometimes, not so much in the urban areas, but if you go out in the country in the bush, they're a constant menace.
That's where I was in the
bush. And the joke is, you know, why do Australians talk with the accent with their lips together? Now, how are you going, mate? How are things? No, the lips are not open. It's to keep the flies out.
Ah, that's good. Okay, that's a good. I don't want to do my Australian accent, but I was thinking about that I should flip my video camera upside down so that we would be.
You should, yes.
Yeah. You sent a list. We're talking blessings of COVID, which is not normally how people think about COVID, but I think it's the Christian way. I remember, Dr. Kleinig, this. We were sitting around with the Doxology Collegium guys, and we were talking about ministry to people with Alzheimer's, and you brought out this question, what is Jesus teaching us by giving so many of his Christians Alzheimer's? And I've not stopped thinking about that question for about 5 years since you asked it, but just the fact that that's the question that we should ask. And so when we see something even like COVID, we ask, well, what is Jesus teaching us? Because Jesus obviously loves us and he wants to bless us. So that's the right way to think about it. So maybe even before we start looking at the seven blessings that you've talked about, how you've discerned these from COVID, even how we are to look at the world and look at our lives to see the Lord blessing us in it.
Yes. And I want to touch on it. There's two ways that we look at the world, but we look at the world with the eyes of Jesus, with God's eyes, and things look differently. What looks good in human eyes is not necessarily good in the eyes of Jesus. But more astonishingly, what looks bad is good in his eyes. Just think, for example, of the crucifixion of Jesus. That's as bad as it gets. Or the exile in Babylon, Old Testament. And yet, in God's providence, things are turned upside down. They are times of great blessing. And that's been the case in church history, and it's also the case in our lives.
The first blessing you mentioned is, this is interesting because it's kind of a sneaky blessing, the blessing of face-to-face bodily interaction. Because especially when, you know, it is an amazing thing to be, to encounter someone with a mask on their face. It's, you realize how, well, so talk about that a little bit.
One little side riff. I want to say where I'm coming from. It would be interesting to hear you talk about the blessings of COVID because you yourself have been infected by it. Now, if I can just put my cards on the table, I have not been infected. And I don't know anybody who has been infected in Australia. The closest it's come to us is the nanny of one of our children. I've been spared, and most Australians have been spared. So what I say is secondhand and at a distance. And some of you may feel that it's a bit cold and not compassionate and lacking understanding, but that's where I'm coming from necessarily. But I'm also coming from Australia, where we've been far more successful than probably anywhere else in the world in curbing the epidemic. So that's where I'm coming from, just to put my cards on the table. First of all, the most obvious thing that strikes me, and it's a bit ironical given that we're talking on Zoom, virtual contact, and yet it has the illusion of face-to-face contact. The greatest blessing that has brought home to me is both the necessity for us human beings of physical, bodily interaction with each other, and particularly face-to-face interaction. We human beings weren't designed as discarnate minds or emotive beings, but bodily beings. And the primary mode of our existence is face-to-face. And in talking to people here in Australia, what have you missed most of all during these last 9 months? And what have you appreciated most of all? What they've missed most of all is face-to-face interaction. Old people like me who've not been able to meet with and see and hug their children and grandchildren. During the biggest shutdown, that's what Claire and I missed most of all. But also the flip side is true. What we appreciated most of all and treasured most of all was the face-to-face interaction that we had with the people that we had. When we had face-to-face interaction with our children. And I still remember the first contact with our grandchildren. And it's great now because there's no limits on face-to-face interaction. But also, then what that made us appreciate is that face-to-face interaction, but also to value face-to-face interaction with each other. We were deprived of it with other people, so the interaction between Claire, my wife, and I was so much more precious. You can see the importance of this and its flip side. I just read yesterday of the plague of loneliness that is running through the US and the Western world. And there's two, it wasn't caused by COVID, but it has been catalyzed and aggravated by COVID. And there's two groups of people that are chronically lonely in our society and crave contact with others, and that's young people school age kids, young adults, and old people, particularly those old people who are confined in aged care. So the greatest blessing for me is a renewed appreciation of face-to-face interaction. Now, Zoom like this is good, but I can't give you a hug, Brian.
I know it. I know.
There's a whole dimension missing. Despite how good this technology is, and it's not only face-to-face interaction with each other, you know, as human beings, but the awareness of the importance of face-to-face interaction with fellow Christians and pastors and, above all, Jesus. And that's what's provided for us in the divine service. What I missed, first of all, most of all, as a Christian, was for a while we couldn't have Holy Communion. And I didn't realize how terrible that was. I didn't think I'd feel how terrible it was. But on the flip side, how good it was once Holy Communion was restored. And, you know, under restrictions and with spacing and all the appropriate measures, even the abomination of individual cups and so on, this was just, to use an Australianism, bloody good. Literally bloody good.
Yeah.
Just there was something there, and the elation that I felt, and the elation of people in our congregation was palpable. And so even though there's been a lot of transmission of worship, and no doubt you've done it too, via Zoom and electronic media, that's a poor substitute for the real thing.
Do you have masks, and is the practice there that masks are mandated, and what does that look like?
That was very limited, and it's only in some contexts. Interestingly, last night we went to a concert, the first concert, a musical concert, open musical concert since COVID hit us, and it was required that we wear masks, and it was terrible. And I find it utterly alienating and so on. But we haven't had the require. So there's just been a few circumstances in which we've been required to wear masks. Interestingly, never had to wear masks in church, never had to wear masks in public, never had to wear masks in face to, you know, in meeting with friends and family. The only time I've had to wear masks is visiting my doctor.
I had to, when I was just getting better, I had a lot of delusional things happen. And when I was just getting better, I was going over to visit someone whose mom was dying. And so I still wasn't even able to drive. Carrie had to drive me there. And I was, I wasn't fully there, but so both the mom was there and I ministered. Then I was with the daughter, who's a member of mine, and her sister. They were both wearing masks. And I had this moment where the mask disappeared and it was just a blank face.
Yes.
And it was like a horror movie. And that's, it is so much of, well, so there's a theology on the other side that talks about how we behold the Lord with unveiled face. And there's a whole theology of the face of God and seeing God face to face as well that comes out of that. Okay. We're back. Sorry about that, Dr. Klein. I was telling you about this horror story of when the mask disappeared and there was a blank face. And
yes.
But I was then thinking that there's the flip side, which is the theology of the face.
Yes.
There's a lot that the Bible talks about with the face, and even having an unveiled face.
Yes.
To stand before the Lord with boldness and.
Yes.
So thoughts on that?
Yeah, and the word in Hebrew and Greek for face is presence, countenance. So presence and face goes together. You can't be present with somebody without their face. And not just there, you know, what it struck me is, you know, normally I think the eyes are the most important part of a person and tell the most. But when you're talking, interacting with people with a mask, you realize it's the whole face. Mm. And just the disposition of the face and the mouth is as important as the eyes.
Do you know, I don't know this, do you know if there's theological reflection in Islam about why women are to be masked? Or if is it just a practical, legalistic kind of oppression thing that they do? Or do they discuss that theologically at all?
Not theologically. There's discussion socially, and sociologists do it. Is that you reserve your, and it's very profound. I can just illustrate. I hope this doesn't take too much time. You, in Germany, you have two modes of address. There's the polite, Z, distance, and then there's the do, the personal, intimate. The reason for that covering is that the face of a woman, if you like, is reserved for her husband and her family. Because face has to do with intimacy. And you in pub, you don't say a woman doesn't engage in intimacy in public, but only in private, with her husband, with her children, with her family.
The second blessing.
Yeah.
Oh, this is beautiful. Time at work. No, it's time at home with spouse and family. And yes. It is true that COVID really slowed everything down.
Yes.
What thoughts on that?
And brought people back to time at home and with the family. The most obvious thing was work. Almost everybody we know who's in the workplace, wherever possible, worked at home. And there were, and that was possible because of the internet and so on. Initially, it was a big disruption, but they've enjoyed it so much that they are now negotiating with their employers to do part or if not all work at home. It's not only, you know, that you spend less time traveling, but the thing is that you are at home and you go back to an old order, which was we separate work and family by and large in the West. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, work and family, the home was the workplace was the home. And you didn't work by yourself with other people, but you worked together with your family and particularly with the spouse. Mm. God created Eve to be the helper of Adam. That means not just companion, but also workmate. We were meant to work together. So it's the rediscovery of the blessing of working together. And, you know, having a cup of coffee together, having a chat during the day, having lunch together, taking off time together, and using the time that you would have spent in traveling to interact with each other. So that's been, when I've asked people, what's the greatest blessing of COVID? Most people say, yeah, working at home and being at home. And it's not just the blessing of working at home, but schooling was done largely at home. And that's where schooling belongs. One of the greatest curses of our time, if I can put it in dramatic terms, is that the government has taken over education. In God's order, parents, grandparents, the home is the place for, if you like, at least primary education. Parents then had discovered the joy and the value of homeschooling. And that in many cases, many of them felt ill-equipped to do so, but found that they were much more effective than the teachers in dealing with the educational problems of the children. So working at home, education at home, The other discovery was of leisure at home, family leisure. One of the things that's happened in our society is that we are so busy that we have no time for leisure.
Mm.
And if we do, we individualize leisure. We go and work out in the gym or play sport with other people. But leisure was largely, during COVID, at home. One of the interesting things that I observed during the shutdown was is this. Usually, at around about 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon, I go for a bike ride. That's my daily exercise. And I go down a bike track to the sea and go along the sea coast. Usually in the past, I haven't at that time of the day met many people on bike. And usually it's mothers with babies, you know, getting out, or grandparents with young children. Now, what happened during COVID was that the track, which is both a walking track and a cycling track, was occupied by new customers, if I can put it. Most surprising, it was fathers with babies.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before. Or whole families going with for a bike ride or a walk together. So family doing things together, and even as simple as going for a walk or ride, or getting down to the beach. There's a playground there. There's the sand by the beach. Whole families playing together.
That's cool.
That's new. And families have rediscovered the value of doing leisure things together. Then lastly, too, is that families, because of the different lifestyle, have rediscovered the value of doing prayers and devotions together. Hmm. Now, that's, I don't know how much of that there's been, but I've heard that said. So the family has been rediscovered.
It is something. I was thinking about that too, how the family is there, but how when everyone is locked down, that doesn't mean everybody goes to their room. It means everybody goes to their home.
That's
so
right.
You don't get for that. That is the unit that is safe. And you would never separate. I mean, I suppose, like when I was sick, I had to be separated from the family. But just in general, you retreat to the home, but you don't retreat further than that. And that's where
you just don't distance at home. You don't wear a mask at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is connected to the third. And this, I think, with the third blessing that you said, with local communities. And this distinction of people who live somewhere rather than anywhere, from Roger Scruton. I'm interested in that.
Okay. Do you know Roger Scruton? He's one of my favorite philosophers. He's an Englishman.
He just died this year, I think.
He just died, and a man of great wisdom. And one of his big emphases, there's lots of very good, he's a philosopher who not only has knowledge, but wisdom. And one of his great themes, besides, you know, life and the body, is that there's two groups of people in our society. There's the local people who live somewhere, whose center of gravity is the local community. And then there's the internationalists, the people who are at home nowhere, but are at home anywhere. Mm. So there are the anywheres and there are the somewheres. And he explores the peril, you know, what happens to people who don't have any local home, and the importance of being located in a local community. Okay, now that's another whole huge topic. What I've noticed is that people have rediscovered the life in the local community and have got to know their neighbours. and realized the value of interdependence, not just within family and community generally, but in local community. An interesting thing happened around about New Year. For the first time, we had a street party organized by a woman we know. She had spoken to us, you know, it's good to get to know you, but most of our contacts past have been very limited. But they've been increased under COVID because people have been at home. And we've had a more interaction with our neighbors these last 9 months than in all the years we've been living here. Right? So the local community has been built up. And we now know who our neighbors are. So, for example, we had, because we know our neighbors, we had an overabundance of fruit, didn't know what to do with it. So what did we do? Give it to our neighbors. And, you know, had a chat to them, got to know them in a friendly, non-threatening way. Because, you see, the words got out that I'm a parson, so people are wary of me. But if I come giving fruit,
big buckets of avocados. All right, the pastor can come if he brings avocados.
Yes. But also, it's not just local communities and neighbors, but local businesses. And buying locally, the importance of the local supermarket, local store, delicatessen, just the value and importance of that, and the appreciation of local businesses that threatened to go under. But people realize, look, if we go shopping on Amazon, basically we're putting local people out of business. So let's buy locally.
There,
because they
Amazon
need...
it's been a huge day for Amazon. You know, all these huge corporations have really boomed during this whole time.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about that. What your thoughts?
Yeah, that's the same here, and that's a big danger. But the local businesses have been fighting back. You know, say cafes and restaurants have been closed. But takeaway has burgeoned. The ones that have survived on takeaway. And so probably we've had more eating out during COVID than before because we've gone and got takeaway from local stores. And they're most grateful and the service is superb because they are struggling for survival. The other thing too is that what we noticed that many people have holidays planned, you know, a year or two in advance. Now, all of the interstate and international holidays were cancelled, and so people had to look locally and take holidays locally, and that's been a joy. People have got to know their own community. The possibilities within their own state and the states that were open. So value of local holidays is a rediscovery.
Local holidays. So I was thinking that like, so Adelaide days or something like this, but that's just staying home for your vacation and being a vacation in your own city and recognizing what's right in front of you.
Yes. Like, for example, we've just come back from a beach holiday by the coast for 10 days.
Ah, it's great.
Instead of going up to Queensland or somewhere, or to Thailand or Bali or someplace like that.
Your fourth blessing is of simple and informal physical activity. We were talking about this a little bit just before we started recording, and the refreshment of just being in your body, fishing and doing something that's simply physical.
Yes.
I'd love to hear about that too.
Okay. There's lots of things that people have come to appreciate, and I've seen, and talking to people has increased. So there's much more home cooking. So if both husband and wife are at home, okay, it's easy enough to make your own do cooking and meals, and to rediscover the joy of cooking and bread making. And for example, we've had lots of fruit, bottling fruit. So the joy of cooking and family cooking. So instead of just the one person, usually it's the mother or the wife doing the cooking, getting the kids to help with the cooking, and the husband, most importantly, to actually help out and to do some cooking itself. And the rediscovery of the joy of home-baked bread or homemade meals. That's natural. Secondly, and the local garden centres have boomed because people not only have been doing their own cooking, but want to cook using their own vegetables. And so people have been spending more time with growing stuff in the garden and rediscovering how good that is. I mean, I've always known that, and I'm a garden freak, but that's been a rediscovery, particularly in Australia, where we have houses on large blocks, and most people who have their own homes have room for gardens, and the weather's good for gardening all year round. I've spoken about the joy of exercise, simple exercise, not the canned exercise in the gyms, but walking and riding bikes boomed, and people have come to appreciate that. The joy of not only working at home, but instead of getting tradesmen in to fix things up, doing things for yourself, not just fixing things up, but home improvement. So the shops that have basically catered to home improvement have boomed. So home improvement, home renovation, and the joy of that. And most interestingly, blessing of games together at home in the family. Husband and wife, instead of going separately to the gym, doing stuff together, and the whole family having physical games, you know, playing cricket or football or whatever together, playing, you know, various physical games. Seen a lot of that in the playgrounds and the backyards and the parks during these last 9 months.
You have, I think, finished a book on the theology of the body. Is that right? And that... This idea that we are, so maybe just a little bit, could you give us a little bit about that? I mean, there's the danger there that we think of ourselves as, I think you said the phrase before, disembodied minds or something.
Yes, or disembodied units, discarnate beings. That we live, if you like, in the mind rather than in our bodies. Particularly as a lot of work these days is mental work, and entertainment is mental entertainment, if I can put it that way. The basic fact that both physically, both in the order of creation and as spiritually, we live in the body, and from A to Z, we are living in the body. By the way, the book's wonderfully made. This is a plug. It's going to come out from Lexham in June.
We'll get back on here and have a conversation.
Yeah, okay. That's another story.
Yeah. Now, number five, I have a question mark by.
The blessings of good, trustworthy government. Now, what's obvious is that a lot of the bad things that have happened are from both bad government and untrustworthy government. Now, they might be good government, but they are, people don't trust them. If I can think locally, the states that did best, or as a nation we did best, because by and large we have a good government. And there was cooperation between the government and the opposition as far as measures that were taken to combat COVID. There was niggling at the edges, but by and large, there was agreement about what needed to be done politically. And the government went out of its way to justify itself and to win the trust of the citizens. Almost all those states went down that road, except one state, and I won't go into politics, but the states that did best had that combination of good government and trustworthy government. People trusted it. So there was not much need to enforce distancing and so on. People did it voluntarily. It's part of our British heritage, you know, queuing, lining up, doing the right thing. It's an example of, you know, where people trust, where the government's trustworthy and people trust government, you can get things working properly, citizens and government working together for the common good. And good governments, if you like, that support healthcare, social welfare, and science. One of the most interesting books that should be compulsory reading for anybody reflecting on COVID was written by the French writer Camus, The Plague. I think it was 1946. He describes a plague in Iran in North Africa. And it gives an uncanny description of what happened in the city with the epidemic. The panic that seized the population from deliberate disinformation, false information, the way the government abused it to clamp down and it's and become totalitarian, and the fear of the citizens, which conspired to produce all that. But the main character is a very honourable, righteous man, a doctor, I think, from Mission. And he then works against that. And basically the message of the book is that the epidemic was curtailed and overcome by truth, honest information, reliable information, scientific information. So scientific truth and real scientific truth, not phony science, and good medical care. Not a big political solution, but those two things basically helped to turn the tide. What COVID has shown me, and I don't, and we're in a better place to see that than the fiasco that you've had in the US, is the value of good government with the cooperation between government and citizens, and how this depends on the media and honesty and truth. The value of medical knowledge and care. Not so much knowledge, but medical wisdom and care. What shone for me during this time is not necessarily the resort to knowledge, but wisdom. The Prime Minister has done well because he has exercised wisdom. Our local Premier has done well because he's exercised wisdom rather than flaunting knowledge, and so on. So there's been the exercise of wisdom. So, for example, I've mentioned with you in our previous chat, the thing that has helped Australia to avoid the epidemic by and large, except in very small measure, was not just the shutdown and the distancing. We shut down foreign travelling because that was the source of infection. So that was a political measure that came in early and saved us. The other thing that was quite simple is contact tracing. Developing a good system of contact tracing and, if you like, isolating and dealing and treating those people, not only who have had COVID, but who've come into contact with them. Now, that's simple wisdom. And it's simple political wisdom. The other factor that's a good government that promotes good health care, and we've got a good, far better healthcare system, I think, than yours by and large, but is a health system with contact tracing, but also promotes science. What is it that's likely to turn things around? It's the miraculous development of vaccines. The shortest time ever, and this is one of the most complex viruses imaginable, due to the work of one brilliant woman scientist, and building on that, you get science has shown its true face, which when it deals with truth rather than politics. And with that then comes the use of appropriate technology. Now, we've seen the abuse of technology nowhere more than in the US. But we've also seen the good use of technology with the internet during the pandemic. What saved many people was the internet. Now, I could stay in contact with people all around the world via internet. And that made it something of a holiday for me. We could stay in touch with our children and friends and so on via the internet. When the shutdown was most extreme, we could hold services via the internet and so on. So what that's shown is the use of good technology, which is part of good government. Now, you have some questions on that. And I'd say that this is good Lutheran teaching. Mm-hmm. What is the purpose of the government? Mm-hmm. Is to promote justice and good order for the benefit of all people, mm-hmm. and the protection of all people.
A mudslinging here. That's the problem. The political conversation is violent from both directions here in the U.S.
Yes. So the blame game is equally on both sides. It was with Trump, but it's also now with Biden. But what this is a challenge, you know, what's Jesus teaching us here? Is not to think in party political terms, but to think in terms of good government. No matter what the political system is, no matter what the level, whether it's local government, state government, federal government, whatever, but good government, but also the limits of government. What COVID has shown here, Australia rather dramatically by the different measures of the states, is the states that have been suffered worse are those that have had the worst governments. Those that have done best have done best. It's not just across it's both sides of the political divide fall into these categories.
Why is technology linked up to government?
Because government in its broader sense is the whole of public life. And government and media belong together. Okay, gotcha. There's a whole theology here that we'd need to have, the media. And one of the problems that you have is a media and business that's out of control. A big business that's out of control and grabbing power, media that's grabbing power, and both of them not operating with control, appropriate controls, not controls, but under the law. So lawlessness, mm-hmm. in these areas. And the challenge for us as democratic societies is to bring back the rule of law. Law governs government and the all branches of government. from healthcare through to welfare, through to media, technology, and so on. Science, education.
Number six for me is one of the, I think this is what I really am interested in hearing. It occurred to me very early when I was thinking about COVID that just like the Lord used the 10 plagues to attack the idols of Egypt, that's just what the Lord does with plagues. He attacks idols, so that this pandemic is also now exposing our own idols here. Yes. And you have five of them. Exposed.
I didn't want to have 10 commandments or 10 plagues. So five. I could multiply this at great length, but these are the ones that have struck me most of all. And I've picked up. God doesn't cause epidemics. He allows them. Well, not. There might be some circumstances where he sends an epidemic. But that's another whole question. He uses it to bring judgment on us, to reveal the truth, reality, to bring us to our senses. And he does by exposing our illusions, our idols, to bring us to repentance, to bring us to our senses, like the prodigal son. The first illusion, and this is the basic one, and it's beginning to make life difficult in the West as a whole, is the illusion of personal autonomy. That I am my own master, my own boss, I make myself what I am, etc. There's a whole philosophy there. But what COVID has done is to show that we are not autonomous. We're not independent, but we are linked together in ways that we mostly don't even appreciate or understand. So we are not only depend on others, but there's a web of interdependence within family, within local community, within a local economy, within a state, within a country, but also internationally. COVID is an international problem. It's not just an American or Australian problem. It's international. And it's shown how we are all in it together. None of us is independent. And from a human point of view, we're all dependent on each other in this web of interdependence. And ultimately, we're all dependent on God. So that's the first illusion. The second illusion is the illusion of control over our lives, and it follows from the illusion of autonomy. From earliest childhood, children are taught to take control of everything. And our whole society is geared towards control, and we get our security from our ability to control our lives and our own little world. So we create our own world. We create ourselves, we create our own, and within those world, we are in control. And we feel safe as long as we are in control. But what the COVID's shown is that we're not in control. It's shown our fragility, our vulnerability, that most things are outside our control. And what's interesting is that people are discovering that this is a good thing. It's a relief. What a burden to have to keep your tab on everything to make sure that everything turns out right. It's all up to me. If I don't get things right, if I stuff things up, my life's going to be out of control. Chaos will come. Whether it's my marriage under control, my family under control, my work under control, my life under control. There's one of the best columns that we had locally in The Australian was one by an interesting writer called Nikki Gemmell, who's not a Christian, But he said that the best thing that happened to her in COVID was to discover the joy of not being in control anymore and taking things as they come, step by step, not worrying about the past and trying to control that, not worrying about the present, not worrying about the future, but just being in the present and taking things as they come, step by step. Losing control was discovery of joy. Right? Now that goes a deeper level with, you know, if you think theologically, resting in and entrusting ourselves to God. The third exposure is the exposing the misplaced source of physical security and the things that we rely on for physical security, whether it's money or job or whatever the case may be, that we depend on so many things for our physical security. But we've discovered that many of the things that we thought gave us security don't give us security. And that in any case, if we look for security in the wrong things, we are riddled with anxiety and fear because, we might not be safe anymore. What this has shown me is how the bottom line for most people is physical security. What they look for from government, what they look for from lives is physical material security. Now, what this shown is ultimately we have no physical, absolute physical security. It's only relative at any stage. And what's more, what it's shown is how society unconsciously is riddled by anxiety about from our insecurity, that most of us are insecure in ourselves spiritually from a bad conscience, but we're insecure and we therefore are riddled with anxiety, but also riddled with the fear of death. What this has shown is that people are anxious about the loss of material security and death more than anything else. The fear of death has rippled through our societies. That's the third thing. You can come in.
There's so much there.
I mean, there's so much.
Jesus talks about the worship of mammon is worry. Yes. I mean, worry is the liturgy of money worship. And Paul talks about how, maybe not Paul, Paul talks about how if we have the fear of death, we're in bondage to the devil in Hebrews.
Yes, that's Hebrews chapter 2. Yeah. Yes, the fear of death puts us in bondage to the devil. So anxiety and fear, behind anxiety and fear is fear of death. And the devil uses this against us. And but another whole dimension, which I won't touch on, is the whole aspect of the spiritual warfare in COVID. But this has brought to the front the fear of death. And interestingly, I've found it not so much with old people, but people with people in their prime and young people, teenagers, late teens, early 20s, the fear of death and worry about, and children worrying about mum and dad dying. Right? So that's come out into the open.
I want to, we're going to have, we'll just, that'll be marked for follow-up because I've been thinking nonstop about that as well. But
yes.
But so this is wonderful.
And our coming out of this, our exposure of our wrong hopes and our wrong fears. There's right hope and there's right fear, but what this has exposed is our misplaced optimism and pessimism. You know, what's happened here is people be over-optimistic. Okay, you'll get a shutdown and immediately this will stop things. Or people say, you get a vaccine and then it'll be eradicated. So you get misplaced optimism. Misplaced optimism, reliance on government or reliance on science or whatever. But also what is misplaced pessimism. We are pessimistic. What struck me is it hasn't surprised me that non-Christians I know have been riddled with profound pessimism, not just about COVID, but the future of our society. Take, for example, that the economic measures we've had to take means that both our children and grandchildren will have to pay for this, not us. I've got a good pension. I own my own house. I don't have to pay. My children and grandchildren will have to pay. And they worry about what will happen in our society because of the economic disorder that has been revealed and indebtedness. So, and what you've had then is on the one hand, you get our society has been utopian. We've been looking for the perfect society, the Messiah to come. And yet at the same time, we've had more dystopian fears than ever before. Television novels, most television is dystopia this day. A bad future, a bad society. And what then comes about is the people are vulnerable because of that oscillating between over-optimistic, over-pessimism, then they fall prime to peddlers of alarmism. You know, how ordinary people, but also Christians, have been gripped by panic, by alarmism and the message of alarmism, now that the sky will fall in. There's no future for us, etc. So this has been exposed, not as much as I'd like to have seen it. The last part is the one that interests me most, and that is our misplaced reliance on the false prophecies of experts and leaders. Now, what governs most people is what they think is the truth. And you've had experts who have been peddling prophecies. And whether they are pundits, social commentators, or leaders. What's interested me is how wrong most of the statistical data has been. There's lies, damn lies, and statistics. And statistics have been used then to make models, and how most models about the way things would happen have been wrong. But then most of all, the projections on the basis of statistics and models. This is a bit like astrology and divination in the ancient world. Now, and this is our modern astrology, our modern divination, is the false prophecy of experts who rely on statistics and models to make sure projections. So all the projections about the number of people that would die in Australia have been grossly wrong. Or even the number of cases we've had. And that's around the world. All the projections have shown to be wrong. That have come, not all, the things that people have said, but from so-called experts. And what this is revealing is the problem of who do we rely on for faith, for the knowledge of what's going on now and what will happen in the future. So it's a question of truth and truth-telling. we can go to science, if you like, to discover, if an unbiased science, to discover, you know, what's now. But there's no way that any human being can make any reliable projection of the future. That belongs to God. And that's false prophecy. And we need to name it as false prophecy. It's stepping in the shoes of God and presuming to be have the knowledge of God.
That's
fascinating. So false prophecy, but also then connected with this, and you see it a lot in the trouble in the US at the moment, but also we see it in China and in Europe and in England, is the importance of truth and the difficulty of finding the truth. How we rely on truth. And where do you rely on for truth if the media peddles fake news, false information? Where do you rely on truth where education is largely indoctrination? Where do you go for truth when universities no longer value truth, but value political advocacy? Truth. The appeal of communism was that it prophesied the future and a good future. False prophecy.
Wow.
So we, despite our secular society, we have a society that is governed by false prophecy. And a part of the call for us is to value the truth and to seek the truth. Now, we're running out of time.
We are running out of, I'm just checking. So I have just like 3 or 4 minutes, but I want to get to this last one. But I want to get to that one too. I mean, I want to talk more about, but we better do the last blessing.
Yes.
Blessings from God's providence in the order of creation.
I don't, one of the teachings that has been ignored in modern Christendom across the board, except in distorted form by the sects, is the teaching on God's work of judgment. That God works in human history, judging injustice and evil, but he judges in order to bless and to save. And God's work of judgment is working. You can see this in Genesis 1 to 11. God's judgment comes as a result of Adam's sin. But at the same time, you have God's providence. God limits the consequences of sin. And he continues to provide for human beings. So there's the discovery, and this is just the short of it, is that God is at work in judgment and in providence in the whole of human history. It's in the church, it's in our lives, but in the whole social political order, God is at work, judging evil. He uses evil to deal with evil. He uses the consequences of evil to curb the consequences of evil. But he also brings good out of evil. He brings blessing out of it. So God's judgment on the Tower of Babel, which was the scattering and the linguistic confusion, was the blessing of the filling of the whole earth and subduing it. So God judges in order to bless, to bring good to human beings. And that's basically what we've been talking about this morning. That God is at work as judge. And he judges not to condemn primarily, but he judges to bless. And then together with that, God works in this way, in judgment and blessing, in our Lutheran terms, in the divinely instituted orders. God is at work through the divinely instituted orders of government and family. Or to put it in the right context, first of all, family. You can see this working in judgment and blessing within families, and every pastor sees this, but he also works within the whole of society and in government. God gives the sword, Paul says, to the government as the instrument of judgment, to judge evildoers and evil doing, to establish justice and good order and blessing within the order of creation, to protect people's livelihoods, to protect human life. So partly what we've lacked is in Lutheran terms, a theology of government and appreciating the order, the divinely instituted order of government. Lastly, and also notice that God works in judgment and blessing in the order of creation. God is at work together with us in our station and vocation. But particularly in blessing for Christians in our station and vocation. He uses us in our secular vocation, if you like, to bring blessings to other people. So people are lonely because of COVID, we can be company to them. If people lack something, we can provide for them. Big topic.
That is really fantastic though. I mean, so the Lord is judging, he's judging to bless, and he's doing all of these things to bless in every way, according to creation and also in service.
When in the order of salvation in the church.
Yeah.
So that would be another whole topic. What blessings are there for the church in the COVID epidemic?
That's fantastic.
And it'd be interesting to see what people can see is the difficulties now, but say in a year's time, when people begin to, things open up and church can get back to usual, what blessings has the church experienced? One of the things that I can say is that everybody was afraid when COVID struck us here in our local congregations that we would go under financially.
Hmm.
But you know what? We're in a better financial position this year, the last year, than any year before.
God be praised.
Now, figure that.
The Lord can make us rich or poor. The Lord is, like you said, it should be the most basic Christian proposition that the Lord is in charge.
Yes.
I don't know. We outsmart ourselves, I suppose.
Yes. And it goes back to the illusion of personal autonomy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That we think that we are in charge. And everything depends on us. And so we are to blame if anything goes wrong in our lives, but we're also responsible if anything goes right in our lives. And maybe, I don't know how close we come to ending, but for me, maybe the greatest blessing more generally as COVID is the blessing of teaching people to be grateful. And gratitude for not for big things, but to small little things. Gratitude for marriage, family, home, garden, work, pensions, etc. Vaccines, list as long as your arm. But the exercise of gratitude and joy in discerning God's blessings. What does the discernment of God's blessing, what is it meant to do? It's to show us that they come from God and that they're to be received with thanksgiving. And the blessing is incomplete until we thank God for them and are grateful for them. The enjoyment of blessings comes with gratitude. And that's not the discovery of gratitude is not just something that Christians have discovered. I'm surprised at how many secular writers are now talking about gratitude and the place of gratitude and the practice of gratitude.
I've seen that too. All right. We're teed up for the second conversation now, Dr. Kleine, because there's a lot here. I'm grateful for you and for your time and for your discernment and for even not just for the answers, but teaching us to ask the right questions, to look at all the things that we have, like you said, through the eyes of the Lord, and to be able to receive them as his gifts. So thank you so much for your time today. God be praised for that. Any final thoughts?
I would have liked to have ended the session by reading Psalm 91.
Perfect.
We don't have time. But so
that's everybody's homework, is to read Psalm 91.
Read it and read that this is about protection in a time of epidemic. And the blessing that comes from an epidemic.
Oh, God be praised. Thank you, Dr. Kleine.
Thanks for sticking around. If you stayed to the end, then you're going to want to subscribe. That's just, probably going to want to come to Germany with us and get the Wednesday whatnot. If you stick around to the end, then wowzers, congratulations. And we'll see you soon.